Tuesday, March 25th. Welcome on into Studio 2. Hello, I'm Cherry Gregg.
Hello, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Coming to you the day after National Cheesesteak Day. Cherry, what is your cheesesteak order?
I like chicken cheesesteak, so don't eat red meat. Yeah. So, but I would go to Tony Luke's.
What a terrible answer.
I know. I always throw. But what's yours?
What an insult to the good people of Philadelphia. Sorry. Now, what I just did to Cherry was very mean. I didn't tell her I was going to ask that question. And then I insulted her response. Now, you might be feeling a little uncomfortable right now hearing this conversation, but you could clip what we just did, put it on social media under the tagline, co-host Savage's colleague's cheesesteak order, and maybe get a lot of clicks. And that's what happens today in politics over and over and over again.
Yes.
And in particular, it seems like, at least according to some astute observers, that the right is better at that than the left, which begs the question, do Democrats need more edge? Do Democrats need to be meaner? Is the problem what they say or how they say it? We know there's a problem because polls show Democrats have record low approval ratings. All right, give us a call if you have an answer to those questions. We have Senator Andy Kim from New Jersey coming on the show, a couple of Democratic strategists. They're all going to address those questions. What's your prescription? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Or if you're on YouTube, hello, Studio Tubers. Drop your comment right there in the chat.
Yeah, that wasn't mean, but I get your point.
Meaner.
It could have been way meaner. And I think...
Well, I have a problem being mean.
Yeah,
this is why I couldn't work in politics.
I do too. But the base is mad and they want something a little...
You know, it was pretty mean of you to say my meanness wasn't very good. That was a little bit mean.
That was mean.
That was mean.
Uh-oh.
You should have said, Avi, you were really mean.
Uh-oh.
And that was really believable what you
just
did. But
nice doesn't win either.
Yeah.
You know, so they got to do that. So, looking forward to hearing your commentary. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. So we have our trio of news stories today. And top story here, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, who rose to national prominence because of his ability to troll his Republican opponents online, is getting trolled by a fellow Democrat. That Democrat is Connor Lamb, a Marine Corps veteran, former prosecutor, who took to social media to rail Fetterman, who, according to the Inquirer, has not held a public event in over 2 months in Pennsylvania. Yet, next on his schedule is a ticketed event designed to help promote fellow Pennsylvania U.S. Senator and Republican Dave McCormick's new book about mentorship. Mm. Lamb, who, you remember, he ran against Fetterman to get the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate and lost. He says, hey, Pennsylvania needs someone who's going to fight for them and not collaborate with the opposition, so to speak. He also criticized Fetterman's criticism of the Democratic Party. He said, quote, I know that trashing the Democratic Party gets him a lot of attention, but he wasn't put in office to be a political commentator. He was sent to office to get results. So, you know, Pennsylvania voters, Avi, typically like bipartisanship. But right now, according to polling, only 7% of statewide voters expressed strong approval of Fetterman, who's missed 18 of 91 votes in the past year. And outside of campaigning for Kamala Harris, he's made no appearances in Pennsylvania in a year other than those campaign appearances.
Perfect story to demonstrate sort of the tensions in the conversation that we're having today. And, you know, we're going to get into all this later in the hour, but one of the things that this story made me think about is how Fetterman has risen to power, as you said. He's been so outspoken on so many things.
Yep.
But it's not just his tone or what he says. It's his look, too.
Yeah.
Right? And Connor Lamb has like
the shorts, the sweatshirts.
The tattoos or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Connor Lamb has like the opposite look.
Buttoned up,
You know, he comes from a prominent political family. That doesn't speak at all to his qualifications for office. I sometimes do think it makes it harder to go on the attack when you don't look like an attacker. You know what I mean? And all this stuff, it's so hard to pin down, but it gets wrapped up in messaging and whether people believe you. Mm-hmm. Even though obviously he is pointing out Fetterman does have some hypocrisy on this issue.
Yeah.
He used to have such edge around these partisan conflicts, and now he's Mr. Cooperation.
Yeah.
So there is,
and he's getting trolled. The troll is getting trolled now.
Yeah. With the bell trolls for thee, I guess. It always comes back around.
It does.
Okay, story number two.
Mm-hmm.
The Inquirer is reporting that local food banks are scrambling after the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it would end a program called Local Food Purchase Assistance. Through this program, Pennsylvania gets $13 million. In our region alone, Phil Abundance says it would lose about 18% of its expected revenue if this program is indeed permanently cut. That money would have paid for 1.1 million meals. So looking at the fallout of budget cuts on local food banks here in our region.
Yeah, and I want to point out that the USDA said in a statement to the Inquirer that this program arose out of the pandemic to battle a hunger crisis, and that it was simply returning funding to pre-pandemic levels. But I think it was the abruptness of it. You know, they didn't give a lot of warning. And, you know, I used to volunteer at food banks growing up. And I know that people who typically don't need assistance will lean on food banks when, because of inflation, because of, you know, a recession, because if someone loses their jobs, and you're talking about 1.1 million fewer meals that will be available for folks.
Yeah.
And this is tough times, tough economic times. Egg prices are crazy. Everything's crazy. So I wish they had more time to adjust, at least to this.
Speed and abruptness seems to be the plan, though. So it's not surprising that this is changing quickly. All right, now from food banks to land banks, Cherry.
Ooh,
story number three.
Such a good transition, Avi Wolfman Aaron.
That
see, I'm trying to be nice
because
you said I was anyway.
Yeah, because my ego is so deflated.
Oh, goodness.
Right
so
now.
Mayor Sherrill Parker has proposed a $2 billion investment in housing, aiming to expand Philadelphia's supply of market rate and affordable units. But she is asking city council to loosen the reins on one of their most coveted privileges to help get this done. And of course, the mayor's goal is to create or preserve 30,000 housing units during her term. But I'm talking about the councilmanic prerogative. You probably heard of that, right? She calls it the elephant in the room. And if you don't know what it is that tradition that allows district council members to block zoning changes or city land sales in their districts. And critics argue
veto power,
right? And critics argue that the councilmanic prerogative obstructs development and fosters corruption, while supporters say it ensures that local needs are prioritized. Well, the mayor said, look, let's streamline this process. She wants council to work with the land bank to pre-authorize the sale of city-owned properties for new housing developments. Let's see if this will get done.
This is the toughest political fight she may have picked so far. Look, she's not saying to get rid of councilmanic prerogative.
No.
But for those that don't know, like, city politics, and we're going to have Neil Oxman on later, who knows city politics very well, and I'm sure he will tell us, like, you just can't mess with councilmanic prerogative.
And she was a council person.
And
she
was a district council person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you represent a part of the city in Philadelphia, you just have a tremendous amount of control over what gets built and not built. This is unusual, okay? Like, you can go to other cities.
Mm-hmm.
This is not how it operates in many other cities. And so a lot of developers, of course, like, developers are business people. Business people will always tell you, what I love is predictability.
Yep.
This is sort of like the epitome of unpredictability. There is a single person often who can just stop your project from happening, something you might have spent years planning and gathering capital for. On the flip side, what it does is, if you oppose a project, there's always a chance you can get it defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been the state of play in Philadelphia for a long, long time. It's one of the toughest things to even chip away at.
And people know, but it has caused some stagnation, you know, as far as development. And so the mayor is saying, help me help all of you in your districts by making this a little bit easier.
If I'm on council, I'm saying, but what's in it for me? Like,
help,
like, what you're taking away basically my biggest.
But people need housing in almost many of these districts. So we'll see. I mean, you're right about the political fight. It's probably going to be a slightly uphill battle.
Yeah. Before we head out today, I just want to give a quick shout out to Shayla Smith, who I interviewed for a Studio 2 Extra. We interviewed her when she's a high school student, became the the all-time leader in Philadelphia history among girls in scoring in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, recently she became the all-time leader, period. She passed a guy named Maurice Rice from Strawberry Mansion. So Shayla Smith of Universal Auden Reed Charter High School. More points scored than anyone in Philadelphia history. Congratulations to her. That was a very nice thing to say.
Yes, the rest that was of the a hour wonderful achievement for her, yes.
Is all about meanness. Should Democrats get meaner? Is their problem the messaging or the message? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And we'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Voters across the country are voicing anger at town halls, protests, and online. But many argue top Democrats aren't meeting the moment with a loud enough response to the Trump administration's actions, instead sticking to their talking points, and in some cases, compromising.
On the other side, the aggressive tone of Republicans often helps rile up their base over issues like immigration and economics. Is it time for Democrats to amp up with more forceful rhetoric? Would a meaner approach energize more voters? Is it wise to ditch the when they go low, we go high mentality made famous by former First Lady Michelle Obama? Joining us to discuss if it's time for the Democrats to bring more fight to the game are two Democratic consultants. We have Neil Oxman, founder of the Campaign Group. Neil, welcome back to Studio 2.
Good afternoon.
We also have J.J. Abbott, the executive director of Commonwealth Communications. Welcome, J.J.
Thank you.
And, of course, we have you, our listeners, and we want you to answer today's question. Is it time for the Democrats to get meaner? Is the problem what they're saying or how they're saying it? Call 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop your comment in the chat.
So I wanted to start the conversation with how we got here. And we mentioned the famous Michelle Obama quote, when they go low, we go high, right? And Anthony writes on Facebook, sorry, Michelle, but that when they go low, we go high nonsense was a loser proposition. Second place only makes you first loser.
Ricky Bobby
and
in the comments.
I know. Yeah. Is Anthony right, Neil?
Well, yeah, it's interesting what's going on. This movement of the Democratic Party is coming from the bottom up, truly. 30,000 people in Las Vegas for the AOC Bernie Sanders rally, 10,000 plus people in Denver, you know, thousands of people showing up at town halls. You know, it's not coming from the leaders down. It's coming from the Democratic rank and file up. And at some point, somebody's got to, you know, become the person in charge and become the spokesman for all the anger that's being expressed by rank-and-file Democrats at what Trump and Republicans are doing.
Yeah, and JJ, do you think, is Anthony right? Is it time to let go of that going high notion?
Well, I think it's less about a choice between mean and nice and more about fight or flight. And I think what we're seeing in the Democratic Party is there's a divide among the folks that Neil's talking about, the grassroots folks who are feeling like they have to fight. They're seeing what's unfolding and they are looking for leadership to step up to fight more. And then there was this sort of like contingency of Democratic leaders and electeds who were in this like wait and see mode. And I think that was perceived as, you know, and accurately in some cases, as just not up for the challenge that we're facing right now. And with Democrats in such low power in Washington, one of the only modes that they have to get any leverage is kind of optics and the way that they're positioning themselves in the media. And I think there's partly a generational problem of some folks in the Democratic leadership are not necessarily meeting the moment and how they get their message out. But I think more than anything, the Democrats can't just look at this as purely as like we have to win over people who might be in the middle. They have to be responding to this energy that's coming from their base, or else they're at risk of losing it.
Mm. Kayla on YouTube says, Dem messaging needs to be short and pointed. Tim Walz's "they're weird" should have been the motion the party went with in 2024. People knew what he meant and were able to easily jump on board. Let's bring in a caller now. This is Marisol from Chester County on line one. And I am told Marisol's pretty fired up. Marisol, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Hello. I'm definitely fired up. And I just want to say, I am representing a lot of the Democrats here, Kennett area Democrats, Chester County Democrats, when I say this. But yes, we are angry. We are upset. And I totally feel like ever since I saw Donald Trump chasing Hillary Clinton around on stage and her not turning around and telling him to back off, I was just like, what are you doing? Like, we totally need to get more fired up. Our messages need to be clear. We need to speak with conviction, passion, be angry. Like, that's what's happening. That's what people are, like, responding to these days. And I don't mean to be a bully. I don't want to be a bully. And I'm not insinuating that we need to do that or go that route. But we absolutely have to get fired up. What's going on with the Democratic Party right now? We are at a loss right now. What is everyone doing in Washington? Like, we are the constituents, and we're just floundering, like waiting for some direction, something to be done. Mm. And if this is what it takes, then this is what it takes. That's what we need to do. That's my personal opinion.
Wow.
Thank Marisol.
Starting us off hot. Thank you so much, Marisol from Chester County. And this goes exactly to what you're talking about, JJ. It feels like right now it's a matter of timing. You mentioned that at the top, the default mode always seems to be sort of wait back and see. I think James Carville has brought this up. Just sort of like let the Republicans flounder, let them make a mistake, and then pounce. But there's all these people out there like Marisol who are saying, do something. This is the moment. So, JJ, like, what should that look like? What is do something? When you can't pass laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing is actually right now, I think in this moment is actually good that this is beginning at a grassroots level, that we're seeing everyday people like of all stripes, not necessarily just Democrats, right? Like we're seeing a lot of Republicans and independents who are talking about their family being impacted by some of the things that have happened or happening. And I think that is good, right? Because the most important thing for Democrats is that there is big, loud, public opposition to the agenda that's coming out of Washington. And frankly, like in some cases, the Democrats as a brand is not going to be the strongest messenger for that. But I think one of the things that it also misses is that in this environment, right, in this reality that we're now in, is that like the Democrats need to get attention. And yes, Republicans have all of the power of the bully pulpit because they control the entire federal government. So the Democrats have to be focused on how are we leveraging our opposition in order to get attention. And so it's not necessarily about being mean, but it is about creating conflict. Conflict breeds engagement.
Creating conflict.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that has not been in many cases, the Democrats' go-to strategy in the past.
Well, I think there's been some clear missed opportunities, you know, particularly in the Senate, where there's the only place they really have any leverage, which is in the cases where they need 60 votes, which includes like things like nominations and places where they're allowing, you know, these to move forward without any real like gum in the gears. And so I think there have been missed opportunities, but I think we've also seen that there have been moments where conflict has, you know, shown a spotlight on the opposition, which is like some of the things that Democrats were doing to like show up at federal buildings and get denied. And like in this moment, it takes organizing, right? They have to get people together to be talking about these. It needs to be, you know, I don't think a D.C.-centric response is really how we're going to come out of this in the strongest case.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
This is a great opportunity for governors to insinuate themselves in this conversation. If I was Josh Shapiro and running for president in 2028, which he's going to do, you know,
breaking news here now.
Yeah, notwithstanding the fact that he'll, you know, deny it until he's reelected in 26, is I would go on a speaking tour. I mean, if Bernie Sanders can get 30,000 people, you know, and 10,000 people in Vegas and 10,000 people in Denver, Josh Shapiro has enough, you know, gravitas to get rallies around the country, and you know, talk about, I mean, put together a 15-minute speech that really punches these guys back. I mean, these guys are good, you know.
But Elon, is Josh Shapiro a punching type? I guess I'm.
Well, that's his problem. He's not. He's very, very cautious. He doesn't think about what he's going to eat for breakfast until he weighs and measures it. But there is an opportunity for governors. I mean, Gavin Newsom, you know, is too liberal and has made some missteps. But there's a chance for a governor out there to really become the one of the people, because who is there in Washington? Chris Murphy? Chris Murphy should have run against Biden in the Democratic primary. Yeah. He would have beaten him. I mean, anybody would have beaten him. You know, nobody is doing it because they're hesitating.
Yeah, and I don't just want to throw in here, because I heard this interesting comment from Charlemagne the God. He's a very well-known radio and podcast host. And he said that, you know, he sees leadership in people like Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland, and other governors. I think he even mentioned Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. And he said that there are strong leaders in the party, but the party itself is toxic, and that those leaders ought to just keep their messaging going and building coalitions around the leaders until the party figures things out. Your thoughts on that, Neil and JJ?
Well, he's absolutely correct. I mean, you know, anybody, none of these people have honed together the 15 minutes that capsulizes everything that people are really angry about right now. If somebody does that in a way that Bernie does or AOC has done, you know, because I don't think the Democratic Party can nominate somebody that far left this time. But if somebody does that, that person can get a great leg up on what can happen in 2028. And really, you know, it's not hard to get 15 minutes together about what Trump has done. I mean, Elon Musk calls Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Yep. I mean, if they start messing with that, you know, there'll be a revolution like you can't believe in this country. And you know, if I was sitting with Josh, whose first campaign I did when he beat John Fox for state rep, you know, I'd say this is your chance. This is your chance to really separate yourself from the pack. It's against everything, every fiber in your being, because he's very cautious. But that's, you know,
this is the moment.
This is the moment
to break out. Do you feel like this is the way, using the strong leadership that exists and distancing the party?
I think it's about making it about the issues, right, and how people are being impacted and really localizing the impact. And that's why governors and mayors and city council people are really the most important figures in all of this. And then really, I think as well as like that we're seeing this grassroots energy. And I was telling one of the producers, like, you know, I've been in touch and met some of the folks that have been organizing some of these initial like rallies and things against the Trump administration. And a lot of them are just everyday people. There's this amazing social worker from the Scranton area who organized the first one on the Harrisburg Capitol steps. And there were over like 700 people that came there. And I think it's about really leaders of the Democratic Party both being able to define what Trump is doing. I think the problem with the like sort of just let them fall apart strategy is that people aren't hearing it. And I think it goes to the idea that like people, this is not 15 years ago where people read their local paper, watched their local news, and they could get an understanding. People are being inundated. And so Democrats are competing not just for what the message is, but how they're getting that message to people at all. And so going on offense is really about trying to educate people about the local impacts, about how this is undermining their lives.
Yeah. Let me bring in another caller now. This is Karen on line 3 from Doylestown. Karen, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment is I echo Marisol's sentiments completely. I'm angry and I'm tired of all the belly button gazing we're doing as Democrats regarding how to, you know, reach this conflict. What I said earlier was that I feel like my representatives are not representing me. I don't care, you know, if they're aligned or not, the Democratic Party. Somebody has got to speak out about what is going on with this administration. And the Republicans have no problem getting people's faces when they don't have the minority in Congress. So what's our problem? Why are we laying down? Why are we hiding under the desk? I think we need to speak up and we need to start quick. No more waiting. There's no more time.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Belly button gazing.
Yeah, Karen from Doylestown.
I wrote that down.
And by the way, Ellen on YouTube says we should elect Marisol to office. But
they like Marisol.
But that's for another day, Marisol. We'll talk to you afterwards. But here's the thing, though, JJ. When I hear that comment and Marisol's comment. You could go on some random politician's Instagram. You could go through their press statements. Plenty of speaking out, plenty of strong language. People are going to, quote unquote, speaking out. It sounds like just no one's hearing it, which goes to me, this question about the coarseness of your language. That's a very NPR way to phrase it. But it's just like Trump is so relentlessly in your face that you never miss the message. And it feels like when Democrats sometimes stand up, people just constantly miss the message. So that's my question. Do they just have to be like meaner in the way they express their thoughts?
See, I think they need to be authentic, right? And I think some people are good at being mean and some people are not, you know. Yeah. And I'll just say, like, I worked in the first Trump administration for Governor Wolf. And
he was not mean.
He was not mean, but we were relentless, right? Every time something they did undermined, you know, Pennsylvanians or something was at risk, you know, we were relentless. And I think it is important that, you know, leaders are not just focused on rhetoric, but are focused on amplification and distribution. And they have to be getting this information out and they have to be getting people to tell their stories, because these personal like localized, you know, impacts are what are going to move people to better understand why some esoteric thing that's happening in Washington is impacting them. Around the corner, 400 people get laid off at the IRS. What does that mean? It means those people lose their livelihoods. A bunch of rich people get to cheat easier on their taxes. And this area, you know, is at a detriment because the Trump administration is being reckless in how they're managing the federal government. And so, you know, people like Congressman Brendan Boyle have been, you know, going around and talking about these things. I think part of it is that we need everybody to be doing everything that they can. I think we don't have the luxury of being like we need to wait for one person or another person to do a certain thing. It's that we all have a part that we can play. And that goes for folks on the front lines. Like, we're seeing this across Pennsylvania every single week, right? Whether it's at Tesla dealerships or city halls or small towns, like, people are showing up, they're coming with their signs, they're making their voices heard. And so it's important that Democratic electeds are being both responsive to that and inserting themselves in the conversation to be able to use what power they have, which is really their voice, their platforms, to be able to actually get those stories across.
But if your authentic self is like genuinely, you're just like, you're a compromiser, you want to listen to people, you want to reach out to the other side, like, can
Avi,
can that work? I mean, could that cut through?
The three great Democratic orators of our generation, Mario Cuomo, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, weren't necessarily coarse. I mean, you
totally.
Know, it, and they did
but
have
the question is, has something changed?
No. You can – somebody out there, whether it's a member of Congress or a governor or a senator or a mayor or, you know, somebody else, you know, who's a college president or whatever can find a way to express this outrage in a way that makes people responsive. I mean, I think two people need to go into the breach right now. I think Clinton and Obama need to go into the breach.
Okay.
I mean, given the fact that Democratic numbers are in their 20s, although it'll be interesting to see what happens in Pennsylvania next Tuesday and Wisconsin, you know, in the special election and Wisconsin next Tuesday in the Supreme Court race, because I think Democrats will come home. I think it's just, or I'm angry with my party now, but I'm still going to go and vote Democratic. But it's whether you're coarse or whether you're not, you know, there's a way to express yourself that where people can be responsive.
Sure.
Yeah, I want to read this email from Elise, who says, the Dems lack imagination. We need to get better at thinking outside the box to counter the illegal and unconstitutional actions the current administration is using to dismantle our democracy. We also lack the courage to stand up to it all. That's an email from Elise, one of our listeners.
Yeah. And I know courage has been a buzzword for our next guest at times. I want to bring in now U.S. Senator Andy Kim from the great state of New Jersey. First of all, Senator Kim, thanks for being with us on Studio 2.
Yeah, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
So what's your diagnosis right now on Democratic messaging? Where is the party missing the mark? What do they need to change?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think first and foremost, we just see all the lawlessness of what the Trump administration is doing. And you know, people are wondering, okay, well, then what? And I think some of the problem is that I think a lot of Dem leaders, they're thinking about this work as legislators, as political leaders, but they're not thinking about it as much in terms of movement leaders. You know, I came into this work in 2017. I never was in politics before. I was activated because of my concern about the gutting of the Affordable Care Act in 2017, as did a lot of people. And it created this groundswell. And that groundswell propelled me to win a district that Trump won in the House of Representatives, to really try to move forward. And I just feel like right now there's a similar level of energy. But, you know, we need to show that there is a connection there. You know, this effort right now, the way I framed it in the town halls that I did, it's to, you know, just this energy right now, it's similar to 2017. You know, we need to channel it towards, you know, saving Medicaid, towards giving a goal for what it is that we're trying to get done, and what tangible energy we can be able to manage and mobilize to be able to save Medicaid and push back against this lawlessness that we've been seeing.
Yeah, Senator Kim, I mean, you said these are not normal times. And even in your own state, you fought the Democratic establishment in New Jersey. You won. You've garnered a lot of support among Democrats. But you've been a fairly normal, nice guy, right, in doing all of this. Very, very persistent. You didn't back down. But you never went low. And I want to think that, do you think that strategy will work against Trump Republicans? Is it time for Democrats to get a little meaner? That's the question of the day.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's important to be angry, and it's important to show that that frustration is there. The question is, how do you channel it? And I think for me, you know, I was a Democrat that won a congressional district that Trump won twice in 2020. He was on the ballot. I was as well. He won my district, but I did too. I was one of only seven Democrats in the country to win a district that Trump won. So, you know, what I'll say is I think that we need to show that we have lots of different tools at our disposal. You know, we don't need every Democrat doing exactly the same thing. I've often said, you know, let's not play Pee Wee soccer where we all just chase the ball. you know, I think that, like, there are things that I'm trying to do right now. Like, for instance, you know, I'm somebody that, as you said, stood up to my own party in New Jersey, fought against corruption. I think that I can be a strong messenger right now on an anti-corruption message, you know, showing what is happening when it comes to the lawlessness of Elon Musk. I was a career public servant, worked under both Republicans and Democrats in the federal government. I can talk personally about the work of our federal workers and the importance of public service and civil service. Like, there are strengths that I can bring to bear. You know, I am somebody that stood up against this effort to gut the Affordable Care Act. I've done a lot of work on health care. I can talk earnestly about that type of work, as I did in three town halls. So each of us, you know, we have our message. And then the main thing is it needs to be coordinated. It needs to be something focused. We have to have a purpose for which we're trying to strive towards. And that's something that I raised in these town halls in New Jersey this week. And I think that that's the coalescence that is necessary right now. This message of saving Medicaid, fighting against these and stopping these tariffs and the rising prices that this president's unleashing upon the American people, and exposing the corruption that is rampant in this administration.
Well, you talked about sort of sticking to your strengths, the things that you can really speak to because of your personal experience. You were once a security advisor, right, to the president. And we've just seen this fiasco with the Signal messaging app and the Atlantic editor who was somehow on the chain. This is spilling over into hearings today. Like, give us a sense of how you would message around that. I'm not, no pun intended, by the way, on message there. How you would message on that to break through to people so that they understand the gravity of what happened and who to blame for what happened.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is a great example of what I was getting at. First and foremost, this is absolutely ridiculous. It is. I said yesterday, it sounds like it'd be a Veep episode if it wasn't just so dangerous and insane that things like this would happen. But I think this is a moment that can break through to the American people. I think they understand the dangers of texting war plans out ahead of an attack that could very well put our service members in harm's way. So here's what I think needs to do. First and foremost, yes, we all need to be talking about it. But we have to lift up those voices that can talk about it in a way, again, that can connect with the American people. We should be having veterans standing up, talking about their work in the military. We can have former commanders, people that whose lives would have been threatened by this kind of action. So, you know, people who are, you know, pilots or others that have engaged in sensitive attacks before, what would happen if their location was exposed? Yeah. What would happen to them if the enemy got the plans ahead of time? That's something that'll break through. So what I'll say is, yes, the messaging is important, but there are two other questions that are often overlooked is who is the right messenger? Mm-hmm. And number two is, does the message get to actually the people you're trying to talk to? And so often the answer is no. You know, we have to break through these silos. And again, that's why I'm a big fan. I've done, what, 87 town halls in my time in Congress. I like going directly to these communities. The town halls I did this past week were in Republican districts in New Jersey to specifically go and on the offense and say, hey, look, you know, if your congressman is not going to have a town hall and talk to you, I am your representative as well as your United States senator. I will be here for you. Mm. And I think that that kind of approach shows strength, shows resolve, shows a willingness to go out and put myself in uncomfortable situations. But I've often said, if you're only having comfortable conversations in politics, it means you're not talking to all the people you need to be talking to. And so that's what I hope we really push on at this moment.
Thank you so much for joining us. That was Senator Andy Kim from New Jersey. Welcome back anytime on Studio 2, sir. Thanks for giving us a little bit of your time on this busy Tuesday.
Thank you so much.
And let me read a few comments. We have Lauren from YouTube who says, the message is the problem. America wants something different and they don't want to fund genocide. I really do think this is a huge part of why Harris lost. The people are telling you what they want. Dems are not listening. And Scallywag says, stop ignoring the repercussions of your ideology. MAGA is filling that vacuum. When people become dependent on the working class, independence will feel like oppression. It also creates conflict between the two. So those are two of the comments we got from our YouTube watchers. And if you want to comment, our question of the day is it time for Democrats to get meaner? Is there a problem? Is there a problem what they are saying or how they are saying? Is it the message or is it the messaging?
You can Harold call us 888-477-9499. Harold on YouTube says they don't need to be mean but loud.
Yeah.
I like that as a teeing off point for coming back from the break. They don't need to be mean but loud. But also on the other side of the break, I want to bring in a caller who says, hold up, wait a second. Maybe we're going down a path we don't want to go down here with this emphasis on conflict and confrontation and maybe sort of sinking down to the level of the Republicans.
Quite a few callers.
Quite a few.
888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the chat. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
Oh my, welcome back to Studio 2, everybody. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. If you are just joining us, we're talking about whether or not Democrats need to amp up their messaging game and start being meaner and more aggressive. Some might say more real. With us in studio to discuss this are Neil Oxman, Democratic consultant and founder of the Campaign Group, and J.J. Abbott, Democratic strategist and executive director of Commonwealth Communications.
Let's get right to another caller now. Been wanting to bring in this caller for a while on line five. This is Regina from Hamilton, New Jersey. So,
hi.
Regina, you're on Studio 2. You've been listening to the show. What's your perspective? What's your insight?
I have despaired long ago at Democrats being able to come up with a unified message and communicate clearly to all of the American people. I want to hear every rep. I want to hear every rep louder. I want to hear them picking up the energy from what's happening among the people. And I honestly believe that you hurt the message very, very badly when you communicate it with disgust and scorn and hate. And that's not what we want to return to anyway. And I think one of the communication failures is that Democrats don't robustly respond to attacks. It's almost as if we feel we're above responding to attacks, and we shouldn't be. We do not coordinate our regular weekly, monthly message. You can say it any way you want, as long as we're communicating together. And what makes me nuts is when a Democrat asks a question, say in a committee, and then is not given an answer and then refuses to ask the question again. We don't demand answers to the questions we're asking, and that's a real failure on our part. And finally, Democrats are not amplifying one another well enough.
All right. Well, that was Regina. Yeah, Regina. I just want to make sure we have time to get
some
response.
Thank you, Regina.
So that's Regina from Hamilton, New Jersey. And in that response, she said that, you know, if you express things with disgust, with scorn, sometimes that can be self-defeating, right? And I do think there is a segment of voters now who've come to the Democratic Party, maybe they were already there, who are kind of seeking shelter from the craziness of politics and the name-calling. Could risk alienating those people, JJ?
I think we shouldn't look at conflict as merely like saying things that are mean or being like physically aggressive, because I don't think that's true. One of the most effective pieces of pushback against Trump was the bishop at the prayer breakfast who lifted up, you know, sort of the lack of connectivity between what the Trump administration was going to do and scripture. And I think it's more about, one, when Democrats and people who oppose this administration have an opportunity to challenge them, whether it's publicly or even to their faces, right, is being able to engage in that. I think the other thing is, I think sometimes Democrats obsess way too much over the details, and they're trying to bring bring structure to a chaos environment. And I think a good example of this from 2024 is that, you know, Kamala Harris, who I was a big supporter of, did a lot of work for here in Pennsylvania, I think did something in the range of like maybe 15 to 20 podcast interviews. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance did over 400 in the course of the campaign.
But it's so much easier to do those interviews.
She had like 100-plus days, though.
Okay, true. 100% agree. But I think – but Democrats – and this is a – our profession, a little bit of consultantry, are very guarded,
right,
in particularly Democratic elected.
But here's the problem for Democrats, as I see it, JJ, which is if you make one mistake on a podcast as Kamala Harris, that one mistake is going to be replayed over and over and over again. I could read you a list of things Donald Trump has said about called Colin Powell a real stiff. Mika Brzezinski, a ditzy airhead. Ben Sasse, rather stupid and obnoxious. Stephen Colbert, I don't know why I was attacking him, very weak and untalented. When you just flood the zone with that stuff, you almost can't make a mistake.
Well, I just want to push back a little bit that I think we give way too much credit for Trump, that the things that he does are growing the size of his approval or his support, because Donald Trump historically is one of the least popular presidents of all time. And so he has won elections and he has a tremendous power now to be able to do things. But I don't necessarily think he has popular support. And this whole idea of him having some sort of mandate is completely invented.
The guy won by 1.4% of the vote. This was not a mandate.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't the Reagan landslide or the Johnson landslide. This was 1.4% of the vote.
But I want to, you know, respond to that before I bring in this caller I've been dying to bring in. But one of the things that they are very effective is retooling the message.
Well,
they'll say
Trump is browbeat the entire Senate.
And the Democrats
don't respond. No one says anything. No one disagrees. They all say the same thing. You know, who I've really been sort of disappointed in, because Hakeem Jeffries, I thought if he had run against Obama, would have won every county in South Carolina. I'm not kidding. He would have been the Democratic nominee. And I think he could have been Obama 2.0. And the fact that the House did the right thing, but the fact that he's been quiet, I thought he's the one who could, you know, wear the mantle of an anti-Trump. And it just, he's disappointed me.
Yeah, and let me just bring in another caller. We have Wayne from Skipack, Pennsylvania on the line. Wayne, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me. Everyone's talking about how angry, and I agree. I am also angry, too. But I also think about the leaders that I've had in my life that have had this Iceman effect, where it's like, you can be angry, but don't be hysterical. Put out an aura of, like, you know, control. And I think that's something we need. And I'd like to also mention AOC's speech that she had a few days ago, where she was very constructive, and it was angry, but it was also like you could kind of hear this tone that was just, it was one of the better speeches I've heard. And before, it always felt like angst with younger Democrats, but now it's like, Cool, collected, angry, but yet collected is what we need, not just, you know, being angry at Trump. I mean, look, he's got how many felonies, and he's not, if you look at him, he doesn't look flustered. We need someone like that that can just, you know, put out that I'm in control, and whatever's going to happen, it's going to be. I mean, I can still be angry, but in control.
Yes. Wayne from Skip Back, thank you so much for that comment. And this leads me to this question, because I think about all the meat that was left on the bone of so many things that Republicans have said. And the one thing that sticks in my mind is trans rights, right? Democrats never came up with a complete message to fight for what they stood for. They left it out there and the Republicans sort of tore it up. And I just think about, are there so many examples like that, though, that the Democrats have not created effective messaging around, and like we just heard, have been able to be strong and just defend their position. JJ, how do you think that they can take the shift? Are there examples of people who are doing it right, who are defending democratic principles and are making some headway?
I think there are people that are doing a good job. And I think frankly, we should also be honest that the Trump administration in many ways and Republicans in D.C. are overplaying their hand. And I think that gets to the lack of mandate. But, you know, they didn't run on destroying Social Security from the inside out. They didn't run on this mass unemployment of federal, you know, firing of federal workers and undermining services. They didn't run on defunding food banks. They specifically said they weren't going to cut Medicaid, and they've already voted to put that into motion. And even on something, I think trans rights is a good example. Immigration is another example where the Democrats, they too often feel like they're on the sliding scale of ideology, and they try to move this way towards the right and think that they're going to get less opposition to their position. But it's really like it's almost like Lucy with the football, right? It's like every single time they try to do that, they end up alienating the people who they thought had their backs, and then not getting anywhere with the people that are opposed to them. And so I think what people are looking for is authenticity in terms of, like, this is what we believe. These are the problems that we're facing, and these are solutions to fix them. And I think there are people in Washington that are starting to do a lot better job. We talked a little bit about Chris Murphy as someone, I think, outside of Washington, people like Pritzker and Buttigieg. And I think Governor Shapiro, you know, has picked his spots, but has been incredibly effective on things like Medicaid and the federal freeze that he really hung around their necks. I know he's doing an event today about the food banks. I think it's like we need Democrats to be able to take every opportunity and be able to lean into it. And I actually think, like, I'm a messaging person, but I actually think it's less about this idea that we need a coordinated message, and we need more messengers, and we need more people out there that are talking about this and in a way that is authentic and it is personal. And, you know, when you look at what's going, like, getting attention for the Democrats or for the opposition, it is these moments of confidence. It's speakers at these town hall meetings who are getting fired up. It's people.
That's my point. It's like, who's being authentic in an Obama-style way and actually breaking through in today's political climate? Like, Obama, I think people...
AOC, people thought
we started with the Michelle Obama quote, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that was reflective of the Obama-era approach. And it was a very...
It was effective at the time.
You know, message. And there was authenticity in it. There was an authentic hopefulness. But... with the onslaught of social media and what the algorithms seem to favor and what just the mood of the country is right now, can you be authentic in a non-angry, non-confrontational way and actually break through to voters today, Neil?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, I don't know who could do it, but you can, because, as I said, Cuomo, Clinton, and Obama could do it. By the way,
so the ship hasn't sailed on that.
No. I mean,
have a Trump-style opponent, though.
I don't think somebody has to get up there screaming and go crazy. Like, I mean, Bernie goes crazy and he screams, but people listen to him, and they've listened to him for years now. You know, the we go low, they go, when they go low, we go high. Didn't work for Hillary Clinton, by the way. Yeah. You know, but the question is, how much more are they going to deconstruct in a bad way? I mean, Carvel's right. Let them let them continue to be crazy. You know, the more Elon Musk is on camera, the happier I am. The more that, you know, 100%. He does this stuff.
JJ agrees with that. Yeah.
You know, all this stuff is nuts. And then somebody, the question is, who will emerge? I mean, who's going to emerge to be the nominee in 2028? You know, we don't know right now. There's 20 people running for president right now thinking about
what running. I hear you saying is these things are cyclical and new people emerge all the time. And I think my question is it cyclical or is anger going to be sort of the mode of operation move and conflict, maybe not anger, but conflict is going to be the mode moving forward because of the way media has changed.
It gets attention.
Well, part of it, I think, is Democrats have to be better at telling the story of what is actually happening. And I think that is something that Bernie and AOC do effectively, which is like people are incredibly frustrated about their daily lives, whether it's how they are treated as a patient or as a worker or as a consumer. And Democrats often sort of like get around the edges of like why these things are screwed up, but they don't get to the heart of like who is responsible and how we could hold them accountable. And I think someone like Bernie and AOC, like people are not looking for like they don't believe that milquetoast policy is going to solve problems in Washington. They think there needs to be kind of wholesale changes in how their lives are impacted by others. And so going out and saying, we're going to give you like a tax credit so your health insurance is slightly cheaper isn't really inspiring, but saying, we're going to make sure no one in America is going to be left without care, you know, because we're going to have universal Medicare or whatever. Like that actually meets people where I think they are.
They want to know that the Democrats feel their pain and are reflective of it. That's
that
great
was
conversation.
J.J. Abbott, Democratic strategist and executive director of Commonwealth Communications, used to work for Tom Wolf. J.J., thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Neil Oxman, Democratic consultant and founder of the Campaign Group. Neil, always a pleasure to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thank you to all the people who called in, to everybody who emailed and watched on YouTube. And thank you, of course, to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. And thanks to our executive producer, Kevin McCrory, from Studio 2 at WHYY, right here in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I am Marisol's new campaign manager, Avi Wolf. Thanks
He's
for joining
signed
us.
Up.